everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place to play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Dominate the guy you're playing against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Hear the Tide, Honey Badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast, the recruiting edition. Yawn. Seven consecutive number one ranked classes in a row. National Signing Day, hashtag NSD. That's Nick Saban Day, right?
Man, National Signing Day at Alabama has definitely changed over the time that we've been doing this show and even longer being fans of Alabama. We remember the days when a four-star was a big deal for our program. And today, man, we gray-shirted a four-star. We have definitely come a long ways.
Yeah, have we jumped the proverbial recruiting shark with that? Are we just showing off now?
Man, we are definitely showing off because when you can have 12 early enrollees at your program and five of those 12 early enrollees are five-star consensus guys across several recruiting rankings, man, times are good for Nick Saban.
Yeah, absolutely, right? I mean, they enroll early. They did get to go through an additional spring practice, which puts them that much, you know, closer to being ready. And then you could argue that the proof is on the pudding, right? Once you sort of dress it up right, everybody wants to enroll early because, you know, Jonah Williams and Jalen Hurts, right?
No, absolutely, man. We had seven early enrollees total last year. Two were significant starters. One was a significant contributor. And so you had three out of seven. Man, that's a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hey, why don't we jump into this and we'll kind of set the stage of, you know, kind of how we talk through this. Look, everyone in the recruiting class, it's a phenomenal class. It's, you know, One Service has it the highest rated class that Saban's had at Alabama. So there's no one in this class to talk negative about. We're just kind of giving our two cents on, you know, how we think they may sort of flow through. So we'll talk a little bit about those that we think have the intersection of talent and opportunity to be day one contributors, maybe not starters, but certainly day one contributors. We'll look at those that we think that have the talent to have a career achievement, though they may face a logjam and redshirt. And then we'll talk about guys, I'll just call them wildcard guys. They're the guys that we don't know where to bucket them, but we can't not talk about them. And so we'll do probably two, three for each, and we'll kind of go from there. Tom, why don't we start with day one contributors? You want to go first? You want me to?
Man, you go ahead and take it first, man. Who you got on the top of your list?
I'm going straight to point of need. I'm going straight to an area that we've spent most of last season talking about. You could almost pick any of the defensive linemen. I'm going Isaiah Buggs, primarily because he's a JUCO, and so I think that gives him a little bit of separation on some of the other guys. You're looking at a 6'4 guy, 270, JUCO experience, number one ranked JUCO at his position. He fits an immediate need, and I think that he, at a minimum, Tommy, at a minimum, he's in the rotation at defensive line. I think he has an opportunity to be a day one starter.
Well, man, he would be like a Jerron Reed, right? I mean, look what Jerron Reed did when he came to Alabama. He came in at a very good time. And as long as he's able to take on the double team, you know, that's what we need in the middle of the defense.
That's a great sort of proxy. He's not as big as a Jerron, but sort of that type of role, that type of need that we have, and, you know, convergence of talent and opportunity. I think Isaiah Buggs fits that almost nearly as well as anyone in this recruiting class. Who do you got as a day one contributor?
You know, this is an easy one for me. I was curious how you were going to start that. So I'm going to go ahead and take the easy one off the board before you steal him next. And I'm going to take Alex Leatherwood.
Yeah.
You know, this is easy, man. The offensive tackle, 6'6", 327 pounds. You know, most recruiting services have him as the consensus number one offensive tackle. And this guy's just going to follow in the footsteps of Jonah Williams last year. You know, there's been discussion about Jonah Williams moving over for Cam Robinson and what Jonah was able to do as a true freshman. And so this guy is definitely going to be in competition at that right tackle spot with Lester Cotton. And I think is going to be in a position to kind of give Lester everything, you know, he wants for that position.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there's an opportunity, you know, if you think about, and I agree, I think Jonah probably moves to left tackle. And what that does is it really gives you the right guard and the right tackle spot that's open. And Lester played some right guard last year and sort of moved out of that. And coaches thought that maybe he might be a better fit at right tackle. I think there's some combination of Lester Cotton and Alex Leatherwood at that right guard and right tackle spot. So, yeah, I agree. I think he has the opportunity to be a day one contributor as well.
Give me another one for you. Who else you got that fits that mold?
I'm going to go in the defensive secondary. And for my money, these are harder to pick. Saban's real peculiar about what he likes in his secondary. And we recruited a number of guys last year, you know, Shy Carter, who played a little bit, but not a whole lot. And in that Nigel Knott, I think has an opportunity at one of the corner spots. He may sort of come in from nowhere and sort of wow us. But I think there's a kid to kind of look out for, and that's the Xavier McKinney. I think sort of 6'1", you know, 197. For me, he sort of looks and feels a little bit like a Minka. And I think it's going to be interesting to see I think there's sort of two linchpins in the secondary. What is Tony Brown? What is he going to be? Is he going to, you know, sort of be at the star position? Is he sort of a replacement type player because we've got to move because Eddie Jackson gets hurt? Or does he sort of own that position? And I've seen some speculation that he moves to the corner spot to backfill for Marlon. And I'm not sure what I feel about that. I've seen where Minka maybe moves to the corner spot to backfill for Marlon. I'm not sure what I think about that, but I think there's some pot stirring with those two players. And at the end of the day, there's an empty seat that ends up, and it's either the star position or it's the safety position that, it's either where Minka started the season or where he ended the season. And I think however sort of that shakes out, one of those two seats is open. And I think Xavier McKinney has an opportunity to fight for it.
All right. Well, that's, it's we've only had a couple cornerbacks come in as true freshmen and be major contributors. And so, but just because of the complexity of the defensive playbook, you know, for Saban. And
that's so that's a harder pick. I'll admit that's a harder pick, but I want to go otherwise I don't talk about a defensive back because they're so hard. And so I almost have to force myself to talk about them because it's a compelling topic because there's so much, I think, going to be transition back there. And so maybe I'm just using McKinney as sort of a vehicle to talk about that, but I think he's going to have an opportunity to compete. And look, we've seen Minka do that at that star position. And so I think there's something to him sort of stepping in and sort of being that next Minka. I think there's an opportunity there.
All right. So I'm going to go with the easy one here, man. And I'm going to say this one is not going to count for either one of us. Like, we can't use this in our 2-3.
Okay.
I'm going with my boy, Thomas Fletcher. I think it's safe to say when you are the number three, what exactly does that mean? That you're the number three ranked long snapper in the country, right? That's just fun to say. And so if we're talking about day one contributors, I think it's highly likely that Thomas Fletcher has a very good chance to take on Mr. Scott Meyer, last year's true freshman at long snapper. And we got a coin toss. We got a 50-50 chance that he gets to win the job.
I'm just going to sit back. I'm just so proud of my Tommy. I teach you so well, Grasshopper. I remember a couple years ago where you thought I was nuts because I said, hey, day one contributor, you got to go J.K. Scott. And you thought I was nuts. What are you doing picking the punter? Well, you know, obviously he's been a day one contributor since literally his day one. And so going with Thomas Fletcher, stepping into the shoes of Cole Mazza. And just think about that for a minute. Has it already been 4 years that Cole Mazza is leaving?
And the boy's about to get paid in the NFL for like the next 10 years snapping
the ball. Yes. If you, if yes.
I need to start teaching my 5-year old how to long snap right now. We need to work at it 5 days a week.
I was going to say, and Thomas Fletcher, you know, he only goes about 215, so he needs to put on a little weight. But, you know, the message there really is that that is a skill position. And yes. And so if you have little boys, teach them to long snap, because that's a fast way to potentially get
they're not allowed to get hit on the punt. And yes. They get to run down the field and make a tackle. How exactly. cool is that?
And yeah. So no, that's a good one. I had him on my sort of sneaky pick list. I always try to get a couple of sneaky picks in. And so I kind of laughed that you went that direction.
All right. So I will say in one of my real picks, because that's a gimme. That's an easy pick.
It is.
You know, And these are easy picks too, man, just because of the plethora of riches that we have. And this is just the Alabama program and why when Saban does retire, because I don't think he'll ever go back to the pros, this program will be on autopilot for 3 or 4 years. And the reason they'll be on autopilot for 3 or 4 years is because you're always going to have these kind of kids. You know, very quickly, it reminds me of Terrell Hall.
Yep.
And so some people are saying, well, who the hell is Terrell Hall? Well, Terrell Hall last year was a 6'5", 250-pound defensive end out of Washington, D.C. And he was the sixth player in the nation at his position. So what does he do? With all the talent and the defensive rotation last year, because we didn't have 12 guys running on the front, we only had like six, this guy saw some time. And he was like a beast when he was in there. And so that's why Alabama's going to be good for years to come, even after Saban leaves.
Yep.
So just had to go off on that tangent for a second. But I will tell you to, you know, the next guy that I'm going to put out there, which also just seems like a gimme to me, is going to be the Jerry Jeudy kid. Okay. You know, I was gonna go linebacker, but wide receiver, you know, this is a guy who – he's a little bit undersized at 177 pounds. But I think this is a guy that, you know, sees the opportunity to step in like a Calvin Ridley did. You know, Calvin Ridley has only gotten up to 188 pounds now. And Calvin Ridley was able to see the field due to injuries, right? Had Robert Foster not gotten hurt, we'd have never known who Calvin Ridley was. Well, guess what? Last year, Robert Foster was back from his injury. We still didn't see much of Robert in the rotation, okay? And we didn't see much of Cam Sims in the rotation. So with the loss of our Darius Stewart and losing Dieter, we've really only got Calvin Ridley back as a guy who was getting a lot of snaps. Cam Sims was getting a few, and Foster was getting a few, and Trayvon Dix started coming on. But we like at Alabama to run five wide receivers in the rotation. And I don't think we have five coming back that we're comfortable with what they're going to, you know, show that they can do. And so I think Jerry Jeudy has a chance to absolutely be in the rotation.
I completely agree. And I have him in the day one contributor list as well. I've seen, and this was even just, this was a couple of months ago. This was back, you know, mid season, you know, second half of the season. I saw some recruiting highlights and footage of him. And, you know, I don't often see that and sort of drop my jaw because you think who are they playing against and stuff like that. But this was footage from an All-Star game. And so I guess it was filmed last summer and I just had gotten around to seeing it. But, you know, he was going one-on-one with some really top-ranked defensive backs. And some of the moves that he was making just in space, just getting off the line, not a double move at speed, not a double move sort of, you know, cutting across the field, but just his in a phone booth movement and then hitting the gas and getting that separation just in that split second was very impressive. I saw that and I said, who is he? And I hope we get him. And it sort of turns out that it's Jerry Jeudy. And so he's a guy that I think has an opportunity. And look, have we not seen true freshmen come in and play at the wide receiver position, you know, under Nick Saban? So think about some of those guys. And so maybe his top end isn't that. I just think he has the opportunity to come in just immediately and contribute. And, you know, just because we break things down a million different ways, Jerry Jeudy may already be, he better live up to this. He may already be one of my all-time favorites. My dad's name is Jerry and my late mother's name is Jeudy. And so, I mean, this guy's perfect, right?
No, that is awesome, man. He's got some stuff to live up to, but he definitely, I think he's a guy that just is in a similar mold to Ridley. And you know, I think you could see a similar story with him for sure.
Right.
Give me somebody else on your list. Do you have anybody else on your day one contributor list?
Yeah, I'll go one more on my day one contributor these guys are all kind of new. And so I might do my best sort of Kenny Stabler imitation here. And, you know, I've been called worse for it, but I think the kicker, the walk-on Joseph Bolovas, and I probably did just butcher that. Look, I think he's walking into, I don't think he's like quite like the sneaky pick, like your kicker or like your snapper. But I think there's an open opportunity for him to come in and compete for that starting position. He may not get a day one scholarship, but you know, he may get a year from now, he may be awarded a scholarship. And so and he may be a 3 or 4 year kicker, which I think would be a nice place to be, to have someone that comes in and demonstrates a capability and just sort of builds on that over the years. So I'm going to go the kicker. My day one contributor.
So two of our guys is long snapper and kicker. Is that correct?
You know, and it's not like we're trying to outthink it, but a little bit, maybe
this is the University of Alabama, who you just said had the top recruiting class for 7 years in a row. And out of five guys, we're giving the listeners the damn long snapper and kicker.
I know. Isn't that nuts?
Y'all can just hit the stop button now. It's all good.
Well, no. And I'm telling you, there's names on these lists that, and we're going to get to some of them, but there's names on these lists that are going to be at the top of fans' minds, and they're going to be at the top of, and so there's people sort of, you know, yelling at us, you got to say, you know, kind of so-and-so, and we're not done yet. But when you start looking at, you know, who is a shoe-in day one contributor, those can be hard to find. And it's a lot of times it's sort of the convergence really of what the opportunity looks like. And there are some positions where we've recruited some mad talent that there's also sort of a mad logjam. And so you pick some of these others that we've talked about and there's less of a logjam. There's more of an opportunity to sort of, you know, move to the front of line, if you will. So,
well, and also for the listener's standpoint, on last year's team, there were 6 true freshmen who met this list of ours, day one contributors.
Yes.
Either starters or role players in the rotation significantly, special teams, some type of contribution that was significant to the team. So interestingly enough, 6 of those guys met this list last year.
Yeah, and so insignificant is maybe a subjective term. There are more than 6 freshmen that did contribute, that did participate, in a snap.
Games. Yes.
But we've got a little bit of a different bar that they contributed more in what we're perceiving as a material way. And that's just how we're defining that. And, you know, it's our podcast, so that's how we're defining it.
All right. So give me the next category. Set this up here. So this is going to be the players that we feel like are going to have maybe not out of the gate day one, but when we look back, they're going to have had a significant career at Alabama.
Yeah, absolutely. And so these are the guys that they are no less talented. Some of them may even be more talented, but there's just a convergence of circumstance. There's a logjam that may prevent them from being sort of that day one contributor. Every year I use the same guy as an example, AJ McCarron. It's inarguable that he had a phenomenal career at Alabama. It's also inarguable that he redshirted. And so this is kind of that category. Guys that we think, you know, they may win the Career Achievement Award. They may have a phenomenal, you know, sort of all-time career. We just think they may have a rougher path to getting onto the field, you know, sort of given a log jam kind of ahead of them. So do you want to kick this off or, you know, I've got some names here too.
No, I know you're not going to steal mine, so you go ahead and go first here.
All right. I do have a couple guys, but I'm going to come at this a little bit different. I'm going wide receiver Terrell Shavers, 6'6", 200, at that height weight ratio. I think he's probably a little lean. I think I'd probably like to see, you know, 5 or 10 more pounds on him. He's fluid and tall. I think he does have a body type that, and he's consistent fast, consistent in the 4.4s. And so I think he has a body type that we've not seen, or at least not seen have success. You know, we've seen the Falcons, we've seen Keefs, we've seen other sort of tall receivers not have the opportunity that we think that they should or that they could. I think Terrell Shavers is going to be a little bit different than that. I think he has more top end talent, and he may have a harder route to the field this next season. But I think he finds it, and I think over the course of his career, Terrell Shavers has a fantastic career at Alabama.
Well, definitely that 6'6" frame, right? If he can fill that out a little bit, right? That would, yep. You know, if this guy's, you know, after a couple of years in the Alabama program, if he's sitting here at 6'6", 230 pounds,
yeah,
it's a whole different conversation.
Yep.
All right, so I'm going to go ahead. I've looked this up a couple times, and I'm still not going to get this right. So for the listeners, bear with me. But he will steal this with his second one, since he didn't. I knew he wouldn't steal it with his first one. So I am going to go with the Gatorade Player of the Year, yep, with the top prospect in Hawaii. And so it's my understanding that it's Tua Tagovailoa. Okay, that's best I got. Best I got, Tua, man. I'm sorry.
Tua, man. So, Tua,
you're our guy. No, man. You know, this guy, from what I have seen footage-wise, dude, I see a lot of Tim Tebow here. Okay.
Okay.
And I'm just gonna, and that's obviously that's not meant as a negative, right? Because Tim Tebow had a great career at Florida.
Sure.
And Tim Tebow couldn't get on the field his first year, right? He was backup man, right? And next thing you know, they bring him in to, you know, to do his little jump ball and, you know, run the ball in at the goal line and do his little jump ball, blah blah blah. So this is a guy that I think is going to give Jalen Hurts a fun competition in the spring,
yep,
by being an early enrollee, by being, you know, a freshman only 1 year behind Jalen. I know they like to create separation. I get it. But at Alabama, the reason all these guys are signing early, and the reason these guys are not scared of competition is because they see that Coach Saban is going to play whoever the best player is.
Yep.
And so, dude, we remember years and years ago when Alabama had like the – remember the years ago that we were – you know, I hate to bring up this time in Alabama history, but back when we had all the lovely stuff happen with the program and we had the top defensive line recruiting, mm-hmm, class in the nation. We didn't have the top class. We had the top defensive line class, and we were so excited because we had the top defensive line class. Well, one of those defensive linemen at the very last minute said, well, screw it. I'm going to Kentucky.
Yep.
Because I'm not going to come compete at Alabama. Okay. He obviously went on, had a good career at Kentucky, played in the pros, blah, blah, blah. My point is guys like Tua and guys like Najee Harris, okay, is another example, and other of these high-profile guys that don't shy away for competition, they're the kind of guys we want. This is, yeah, why Alabama has the type of program they have. So Tua is sitting there saying, Jalen Hurts almost won the national championship. He would have been the first true freshman to have done it since the quarterback for Oklahoma in 1980, 81, whatever it was. I forgot. But Tua still comes here. You see what I'm saying? And he was committed a long time ago, and he had 5 visits, and he took none of them. And everybody's like, oh, he's going to flip the field. He's going to go to USC at the last minute. Well, I like the fact that the kid was committed for a long time. I like the fact that he didn't take any of his 5 visits when he could have. Okay. And this kid, I think, has the makeup that is good for this program. This is like the perfect quarterback behind a Jalen Hurts. Because if Jalen Hurts continues to evolve and blows up, Tua's going to be there. If Tua wins the job outright, Tua's going to be there.
Yep.
This is a guy that I definitely think fits into category 2 for this discussion.
Yeah, I think you're spot on, and I think this is going to be a phenomenal. Dwayne Robinson was the player that you're thinking about, Robertson.
Thank you very much.
But yes, you know, I'm sorry, that was just bugging me. Hey, look, Tua is phenomenal, and I was listening to something just ESPN radio, and Trent Dilfer was talking about, and Trent Dilfer runs sort of the 11 on 11, and he was talking about Jalen. And had a lot of positive things to say about Jalen, and was really sort of, you know, building it up and talking about, you know, Jalen was a stiff-legged passer, and that was one of the mechanics that they had to change. Otherwise, you know, he could, you know, he ran a higher risk of hurting his knee, and so he was all season sort of playing with a platform that was new to him, but was really just building up, talking about character guy and the family and unflappable and just really going on about it. And then they ask, tell us about this Tua guy. And you could see, you could almost just hear Trent just go, well, now that's, you know, that's another animal. You know, almost for all the heap and praise on Jalen, it's, you could almost tell that he was like, oh, well, that's another level. And he said, look, I'm not predicting, I'm not forecasting, I'm not, you know, saying it's going to be, but I'm saying when I see sort of the mechanics and I see the athleticism and I see it all together, I see him have the potential to be an Aaron Rodgers type quarterback, that he's that special. And he just kind of put it out there, you know, that he's that special. And he goes, nothing against Jalen. Jalen's incredible as well. But Tua might be one of those sort of in a generational sort of talents. And so it's going to be, and then the fact that he's enrolling early, you know, get a front row seat at A-Day to watch this thing, because it could be very, very special. They're going to start and probably be the starters for their respective teams. And it's going to be very compelling to see how that plays out.
That will be more fun than some of the that would be better than some of the directional school games that we play, for sure.
Yes, it really will be. And look, and you said this, and it's 100% true. One of two things is going to happen. I could make a case for either of them, but they're both true. Whichever one sort of plays out, they're both true, and they're both good for Alabama. Tua will make Jalen, just the open competition, and then plus Jalen, you know, getting better and more experience. Tua will make Jalen demonstrably better, or he will beat him and be demonstrably better. And that's, you know, that's my forecast, is that play at the quarterback position next year will be better than it was this past year. And, you know, I don't mean that to sound like I'm going out on a limb necessarily, but I can say that it will be better next year, but I can't tell you which quarterback it'll be.
No, I'm with you. And either result is good for Alabama, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Well, give me your next guy here that you know stands to have a good career as a whole body of work at Alabama.
Yeah, I'm gonna go. This may be the unicorn that we've been looking for, and it just sort of jumped off. You know, when I saw it and was kind of been just, you know, the little bit of, you know, kind of following of this. But tight end Kedrick James, I've written all over my notes. He's what, 6'4", and the stat that jumped out, I even boxed it, and that's why my notes are so messy. He's coming in at 260, and so I just, below his name, I just wrote Michael Williams, and so longtime listeners get that. I think Kedrick James, hey, is he the Michael Williams that we've been looking for?
Yeah, the guy that we have not been able to fill in this program, you know, for a few years now.
Yep. Yep.
All right. So this one is easy in the category of legacy in the program and the body of work.
Okay.
So listeners, I want you to go back to a name, Deshaun Hand. Everybody knows this name now. Well, Deshaun Hand, when he was a true freshman, was the number one player in the nation, right? This kid, when he came out of, you know, Woodbridge, Virginia, at 6'4", 260 pounds, was the number one player.
Yep.
But because of the depth at Alabama, he didn't see the field. He didn't start to see the field a little bit toward the end of last season. And then this season, even this season, he has been a true backup to you know, the front guys.
Agreed.
Which just speaks to Alabama. Are you freaking kidding me? Like,
right.
That's why we're the 33rd NFL team. Okay. Right. We're not a college team. That's why we could kick the shit out of a few NFL teams this past year. And so, and this category is going to be LeBryan Ray. Okay. And this is just going to be your unicorn that fell out of the sky today because he kind of fell in our lap today. And oh, by the way, because you're Alabama, we're just going to drop in your lap a five-star player who's number one in his position.
Right.
So, you know, Alabama sits here today and they're like, oh my gosh, we were not able to get Aubrey Solomon. Well, at least he didn't go to Georgia. At least he stuck with Michigan, right? So you don't get the five-star defensive tackle that you wanted to get today, but you got an unexpected benefit in LeBryan Ray.
Yep.
And this kid is going to be the Deshaun Hand. Right. Deshaun Hand is going to blow up next year. He's going to be a senior and he's going to be all world. And people are going to be like, who is this guy?
Right.
Well, LeBryan Ray is not going to take that long because we don't have the depth in front of him that Deshaun Hand did. So it's very possible LeBryan Ray doesn't see the field next year, but he will see the field as a sophomore and he will build off of that. And this is a guy who I don't think will be here his senior year.
Okay. Okay. He's one of those guys that people are yelling at us to name because I think, he is one of sort of the highlight names, if you will, in this class. And I think he has the opportunity to,
but look how we're naming him, right?
That's right. What's
funny. We're sitting here naming him as a body of work guy.
Yeah.
not as, you know, you're going to be the starter in September.
Yeah. I wouldn't rule it out though. You could, like I said, you could almost put a blanket over some of these DLs because the need is there. I kind of went with the JUCO because he has some separation, you know, he's older, you know, played more ball, that kind of thing. This is a phenomenal player. And I think he is, I think he's going to compete and then we'll see, we'll see how it plays out. Because we do have some, I hesitate to use the word depth. We do have numbers at the DL, but there's a lot of opportunity for either those guys or someone else to step in and see some playing time.
Well, given the fact that we only got two defensive end type of guys in last year's class, we obviously talked about Terrell Hall. The other guy we picked up was Jamar King.
Yep.
You know, those are the only two we got last year.
Yep.
So to your point, getting LeBryan Ray here at the end, to help out some decent depth in this class was a big deal.
Absolutely. So I'm going with my next pick and I'm doing it under the philosophy of I'm competing with you to get more right answers than you're going to get.
Okay.
And I'm also using the philosophy of you can't go broke making a profit. And so
there's some guys in this category now you're not allowed to pick because they're too easy. Right. Well, there's some guys you can't pick that are going to have a good body of work. Right. We talked about and, you know, I will say very quickly, I compare this year's class to the 2008 class.
Oh, that's one of my favorite classes. That's
what I do. But I do. We're going to look back at this class like 2008. When we had the Trent Richardson and we had the Fulger and our Fluker and we had the
Hey, look, I am no, I'm
give
with
me the help me out. Give me the corner, Drake or Patrick, and we had all three of those five stars who were standing on the sideline and they weren't playing in September.
No, look,
class is gonna be like that class.
Well, look, I'm gonna tell you what, and I gush at the thought of that. When that class finished, when that class went all the way through and finished, I did sort of a retrospective. Was the 2008 recruiting class the best recruiting class ever? And I listed every single player in that recruiting class, and then sort of told their story of their Alabama career. There was a number of players that sort of never really developed. There were a number of players that were two and three time All-Americas that were multiple national title winners. And it was, I mean, it was a treat to go back and think about that. And I'm going to paste that in the show notes. So go to Bama Hammer if you're listening to this, go to Bama Hammer, look for the show notes for this, and then go just do yourself a favor and kind of peruse that list of names. When we reference the 2008 recruiting class, it is with reverence. And so if we're thinking this class sort of projects or makes us sort of recall that, then do yourself a favor and just sort of, you know, go back and look at some of those names.
I started to say, dude, we have to do this real quick because you set this up and our listeners love our long shows. So I had to pull this up real quick. I'm just going to give a couple of those. Julio Jones, Mark Barron, Courtney Upshaw, Michael Williams, Marcel Darius, Mark Ingram. And Dante Hightower. I'll stop there.
Okay. So Tommy, you demonstrate you don't know how the internet works, right? Because you teed and you go get clicks.
I just like name the Pro Bowl roster from the game last week.
No, I understand. And Bear Jones was in that class too, who won a Remington and an Outland Trophy, which,
yes,
you know, I mean,
and I didn't mention him just because he's not currently on a starting roster, which is crazy. But just to sit there and say Julio Jones, Courtney Upshaw, and right. Marcel Darius and freaking Dante Hightower. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Come on.
Three of those guys are playing Sunday, right? Like, not like, and let me restate that. Three of those guys are playing Sunday in the Super Bowl.
Yes.
So how about that?
So go ahead. Give me your last guy here, man.
So, yeah. And so you've distracted me. And so, look, you say some guys are too easy to pick and stuff like that. I have a thread of logic that makes this a slam dunk. So we're talking about career achievement, potential redshirt, but career achievement. I'm going tight end. I'm tight end heavy in this category. I'm going tight end Major Tennyson. 6'5".
Oh, he was gonna be my next guy. Go ahead, have fun with it.
6'5". Look, I mean, here's my case, and the case is inarguable. 6'5", 230, and he is part of a legacy of tight ends that Saban just loves. Colin Peake, Preston Dow, Brad Smellie. There was a transfer from Georgia Tech. His name escapes me. Brian Vogler, Miller Forrestall. Catch the theme.
Yes.
Major Tennyson will contribute during his career at Alabama.
No, man, that's fair. I can't go against that one, man. And all right, I will tell you he was going to be my last guy laying in waiting. And you totally screwed that up. And
you
so
didn't think I'd go two tight ends.
I really didn't think you'd go there again. All right, let's do this. Let's go ahead and flip the field to our last category. And set that up for the listeners.
Yeah, this last category is a little bit of a sort of wild card. You know, it's sort of the mini game ball of the show. These are guys that we don't know exactly where to put them, you know, in the other two sort of neatly categories. But these are guys that we just can't do a show and not talk about. And you know, there's a hell of a lot of these guys too.
All right, I know you have a lot of these guys because of the talented class, but we got to limit this to a couple. So go ahead and give me your first one here.
I'm going to go my first one. Look, I mean, I just can't not talk about this guy. Najee Harris, 6'3", 226. I'll be honest with you. I don't know where obviously he's a running back. And there's a little bit of candor I have. I don't know how he gets snaps. I don't know how he gets reps. I mean, he's uber talented.
Next year, yes.
In this next season. But I think he's too talented to not get an opportunity. And it's one of those things where he has talent where he might be a three-year player. So get 3 years from him, you know. And I think, you know, Georgia learned that lesson with the running back several years ago. We may have probably learned that lesson with Marlon Humphrey. He was here for 3 years. He only stepped on the field two of them. And so if you have this kind of talent, then, you know, you find a way. But, you know, Bo and Damian and Josh and B.J. Emmons, you know, sort of where's the gap and opportunity for him to come in? I can't answer that question, but I just think his talent is just off the charts that I can't keep him off the field. And to me, that makes him like the quintessential wild card. Logic tells me there's not room for him to play. Logic tells me there's no way he doesn't play.
No, I'm with you there. You know, and I think that's a good call, because I think he has shown And his body of work and his crazy body of work. And not only, you know, the listeners have seen his story, but, you know, what he did this year for his high school football team, you know, with, you know, being injured at, you know, before the season even started and carrying the load that this kid did to have more carries and more touchdowns and more yards his senior year than he had his sophomore and junior year.
Yep.
I mean, dude, I mean, there's people that have compared him to a faster Derrick Henry. Who yes. is not just a downhill guy. That's freaking scary.
He's not as heavy, and he's a big back, but he's not that big, right? I mean, he goes, you know, 6'3", so he's got the height, and he goes 226, which is different than Bo and Henry that, you know, were maybe 240. And so he maybe, I mean, I want to compare him to Eddie George, but I think Eddie George was pretty heavy too. Maybe in the 230s. And so he fits this sort of unique spot where, you know, maybe he has weight more like a TJ Yeldon, maybe even just a little bit more. And then, you know, at 6'3", he's got some height. I mean, his body type is, you know, is pretty interesting. If he weren't as good of a, if he weren't as talented as a wide receiver. And I'll tell you what's cool about this guy is he has hands for days. And so I just think there's an opportunity for him to sort of carve out a space, and it'll kind of be fun to see if this guy were Joe Harris, he might be the best, you know, the best defensive end to play college football, but you know, he has his reputation staked as a running back, and so he's gonna play running back, but I just think the guy, it's gonna be hard to keep him off the field.
I will say very quickly for the listeners that it's funny that you mentioned that last comment because, you know, as you talked about the best linebacker, Joe Harris, that reminds me of the Derrick Henry story.
Yeah. You know,
Derrick Henry was being recruited by other schools to play linebacker, and he wanted to play running back. And I think, you know, there's a similar story here with Harris for sure.
Yeah.
Well, my first wild card is going to be a guy who didn't even sign a scholarship today, and that's going to be Jerez Parks.
Okay.
You know, I go back and look at this current class losing Tim Williams and Ryan Anderson. You talk about the talent at running back and the log jam. Well, dude, we just lost two guys. You know how much I like Ryan Anderson, but you got, you know, Tim Williams was 6'4", 253, and Ryan Anderson was 6'2", 252. And they both ran like deers, and they got in the weight room, and they became big as oxes, right? And, you know, when you talk about Saban and his love for tight ends, Saban also loves him some Courtney Upshaw, Tim Williams, Ryan Anderson, Dante Hightower type of guys.
Yep.
And so there's a reason this Jerez Parks guy is not signing with one of 30 other schools who would have snapped him up today. For the number seven, you know, weak side defensive end at you know, in the country.
Yeah.
So at 6'3", 253, this is a guy that might not see the field right this second. You know, there might be at the Jack and the Sam linebacker, the Christian Millers and the Anthony Jennings and the Terrell Halls, you know, their numbers are getting punched. But this is a guy that is a wild card that I could see being a special teams contributor. I could see him popping heads like Mac Williams, you know, potentially, you know, for this program long term. This is a guy that we're going to look back and say we're glad he got here whenever he does get here.
Yeah, and look, I'll go out on what I think is a pretty sturdy limb, and I'll say, look, I know that he is gray shirting, but – you know, it's every year. It's part of the cycle, right? There's players that – there's certain times of the year that players leave a program. And, you know, some
players
–
look at what happened to us this last, you know, offseason.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and that's just it, right? I mean, there are times of the year. And so, you know, at the end of the season, and now we're sort of the elongated and separated sort of bowl season, that's a little bit – you know, Blake Barnett was the oddball, right, leaving in sort of – in the flow of the season. But one of the times that it's almost, you know, you can almost schedule it when players are going to leave teams is in spring practice or towards the end of spring practice, maybe at the end of, you know, after day A day and sort of the celebration with the team related to that, because you learn, you know, it's a truth serum, right? I think I'm at this place in the pecking order, and I have just found out that I'm here, and I see who's beating me, right? I see younger guys beating me in the depth chart, and so I'm going to go and sort of play out my string somewhere else. And so my sort of I think obvious prediction is that the Parks kid, there's a better than average chance that he gets a scholarship for the fall. Someone is going to, you know, recognize that my time at Alabama has sort of run out, and I'm going to leave, following spring practice. And so I think there's an opportunity that some doors open and some scholarships are awarded there, and Parks might be one of those guys. So we'll kind of see how that plays out.
And very quickly, this is another way that Alabama separates themselves from other programs.
Yes. Yeah.
Is being able to just backfill with guys like this.
Yep. Yep.
All right. Give me your next guy there.
My next wild card guy. And to me, this is almost a prototypical wild card, in a different way than Harris was, but sort of, he kind of fits the mold. And I'm going to Elliott Baker, the JUCO offensive lineman. He's 6'7", so clearly he's
another one. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
More of a tackle, and sort of the X factor on him. You know, he could compete. You know, again, we talked about, you know, if Jonah moves over to left, I think Alex Leatherwood gets a chance, and he may actually, you know, maybe start his career right guard if Elliott sort of steps in, and Elliott could play. Potentially either tackle spot. I think he'll get a chance to sort of compete for either of them. And so he could step in sort of day one starter, sort of the JUCO thing. Saban gets JUCOs that are going to come in. And so, but if you think about offensive linemen, JUCOs that have come in and started from day one, do you have to go back all the way to James Carpenter for that?
Yes, you do.
Yeah. And so there's a reputation that maybe hasn't sort of, you know, maintained itself. What was it? Who am I thinking of? There's a lineman that we predicted was going to have that role, and it never sort of materialized for him. And then late in his career, he sort of, you know, had some steady opportunities. Charles Baldwin last year. I mean, talk about a wild card. He could, you know, this guy could come in and be the next James Carpenter, or he could come in and be the next Charles Baldwin, who, you know, I don't think Baldwin even made it through spring drills, did he? And he said, food on that. No, so, yes. And I'm not predicting sort of that. I'm not predicting that role for Elliott. I'm just saying, I look at this guy, JUCO offensive lineman. We've seen some history with sort of JUCO offensive linemen, and so I see a wild card. He could be a day one starter, or, you know, he could be the scholarship that opens up for Parks. And I don't mean that mean spirited towards the kid. I'm more sort of joking off of what happened last year. But I mean, look, there's two players that sort of fit the same criteria, right? Highly ranked JUCO guys came in with an opportunity for day one start, and boy, did they go opposite ends. And so you take the next one in, and it's like, well, you know, this could play out a couple of different ways. And so that's why I put a big sort of wild card on Elliott Baker.
All right, man. So I'm about to throw you for a loop for this one.
Do it.
So he's obviously high radar guy. Okay. Sure. But I'm putting him in my wild card category, because it's kind of like the Joker in the deck of cards.
Yeah.
You don't know where you're going to put this guy. And everybody's got him listed at number two at his position at outside linebacker. But I think Dylan Moses is our next Mark Barron.
Really?
Yes.
At a safety position?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I think this is a guy that will come in, and he will not be able to see the field right now. And he will not be able to see the field because of the plethora of talent, which, you know, we kind of have in front of him. I mean, there's names out there as you know, of guys like Ben Davis, right, who are just waiting in the lurps, right, to step on the field. Mm-hmm. And there's Mac Wilson, who is waiting to step on the field. And those guys were the number one and two at their position last year's class. I think this is a guy that, just from everything I've seen, I think he will be at least given a look, okay, at the safety position. I'm not saying that's where he's going to end up, but I think this is a guy that has the ability because of everybody, you know, everybody speaks about how good of a sideline to sideline player he is and how physical he is and how smart he is. And I just think that of all the linebackers in this class, I think that that could be a natural progression for him to play on Sundays.
That, you know, that's interesting. It his weight, if he were, you know, 220 as opposed to 235, I would probably connect those dots.
Some of the ones I'm looking at are listing him at 225.
Okay.
So some are showing at 235 and some are showing him at 225.
No, that's fair. I say that sort of almost as a nitpick because I look at, and I've got, you know, Dylan in this spot as well. You know, and you could almost sort of throw a hat over some of these linebackers. I mean, I like the Benton kid. I like the Cowan kid. You know, Chris Allen was very highly recruited. You know, all of these guys, you know, all have sort of top shelf potential. And you look at sort of what's ahead of them, you know, with Mac and you mentioned Ben Davis. I mean, he's a 5-star, you know, top rated linebacker who redshirted. And so you've got that, you've got other guys, you know, Christian Miller, you know, I'm sort of fumbling for names, but then Jennings and Terrell Hall are the two guys that I wanted to name as well. And there's more. I know that that's not all. I know that there's more. And you know, you got Sean Dion Hamilton, who I'm a big fan of. And so you think of, we've lost some guys, but there's still some guys there. And could he sort of wiggle a way in? Yeah, I think one of these linebackers will. And, you know, Dylan Moses, I mean, he's been talked about in recruiting for, you know, since he was in junior high. And so it's almost like he was made to come in and be, and I was thinking he was made to come in and be a linebacker, but he might be made to be, you know, he may have such a high sort of football IQ and readiness to play that we are looking for a spot to be able to play him, as opposed to looking for someone to fill a spot. And so
this takes nothing away from Hootie Jones, right? This takes nothing away from the situation, but like, wouldn't it be nice to be able to move a Minka back, right? To corner. Right. And wouldn't it be, I'm simply saying this might give you options at strong safety next to Ronnie Harrison outside of Minka and outside of Hootie Jones.
Yeah. And so my mind starts to wander towards, you know, sort of special package defenses. And so, you know, how many times last year would we see Ronnie Harrison sort of start to crowd the box? And he's a thumper at safety. You know, also, how many times did we see him sort of get dinged? And so, you know, we don't want that. I kind of go back to the days of Landon Collins, who may have been, you know, one of the most versatile, you know, secondary players that we've seen, certainly right up there, and sort of the variety of positions that we've seen him play. And he played a lot of in the box, you know, sort of in the box safety. And so you start to think about, and he played at Alabama, I think in the 220s. And so if there is an opportunity to take someone like a Dylan Moses and make him sort of an in the box, sort of hybrid, you know, linebacker safety, sort of whatever sort of position that could be. We've seen it before. We've seen people do it before. And so, you know, could Dylan, you know, find a role, sort of a specialty player, especially his first year, then yeah, absolutely. I think we might would look at that type of thing to get him on the field and let that help sort of ripple effect depth, you know, in other parts too. If that saves Ronnie some snaps, you know, over the course of the game, and then maybe that's something we want to do.
No, absolutely. Well, give me anybody else that you have in this wild card category. Do you have one other one?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you could probably throw a rug over the, and I'm saying that a lot now, but, you know, you could probably throw a rug over the defensive lineman. You know, we haven't mentioned Mathis, and he's a bigger guy. He goes 295, and so he has an opportunity to kind of play interior. And look, the opportunity at DL, I mean, we've lost Allen, Tomlinson, you know, Dakota Ball for a depth. You know, we've got Deron Payne and Deshaun Hand are really our only known factors. You know, you look at Josh Frazier, OJ Smith, Raekwon Davis, Quentin Williams, Jamar King, there's gaps, right? Someone could sort of, you know, someone could shoulder their way through that pecking order. And it could be any of these three it could be all three of them. But one guy that I can't not talk about, and I'm super excited that we got this guy, is Henry Ruggs. And so is there room for two true freshmen in the wide receiver core this year? I don't know. But Henry's a guy that I think limited opportunity, maybe, playing some out of the slot. And certainly in the return game, I think there will be an opportunity in the return game. And so he may be a guy that can find a role for himself. And I think his talent, at that point will kind of speak for himself. I think he's another guy that we may struggle to keep him off the field and that he's going to have a good career at Alabama as well.
All right, man, that's three for three, man. That was going to be my final guy there. So next year when we do this, I will go first. I won't let you do that. All right. So the last guy that I want to make sure you haven't stole this guy. Have you stole my offensive tackle from Kentucky? I want to make sure I haven't missed that.
No, go for it.
Okay. All right. So I didn't think so, but I wanted to make certain here.
No, I haven't stole him yet.
You've thrown so many blankets around and stuff. I just got to make sure you hadn't, got him up in the blankets or whatever. All right. So I am going to pick Jedrick Wills from Lexington, Kentucky. Oh my gosh, you're picking a five star. The only reason I'm picking this guy is a wild card. This guy chose Alabama over the likes of Michigan and Ohio State.
Yep.
These are two programs that obviously, put offensive linemen in the league on an annual basis. The big thing for him is that he has the versatility to play both tackle and guard. Yeah. And so the only reason I'm mentioning him in this as my last wild card is just as we have seen with the likes of when you have versatility that you can play two or three different positions, it's also hard to keep you off the field, even if you're that swing guard or that swing tackle, which we like to have at Alabama, which we probably really didn't have this year the way we have for, two or three years previous. And so I'm mentioning Wills because I think that, given the uncertainty as far as the two man, the depth for the second line is still up in the air.
Yep.
There's guys that are there, but I think they're just there kind of because they're the guys, there's no other guys to have there in some cases. And so I think Wills has an opportunity to come in. And I'm only putting him as a wild card because he could, we don't know where he's going to end up. But at 320 pounds, we could see his versatility on either the right or the left side of the ball.
Right. I think that's a great pick. I think that he's definitely another guy that I looked at, and especially that guard position, and he has a look different from some of the other guys. He appears close to being ready to play as well. And so, I think there's an opportunity at that swing position. I think it was Corin Kervin, was sort of that swing guy a little bit last year, and he sort of got pressed into action with some injury. Didn't we kid at one point, we played four guys at the left guard spot or the right guard spot.
Right guard spot during the season. Right.
Yeah. And so you think, you never expect to, drill so deep at a position. Hopefully that doesn't happen again, but, you start looking at, who would sort of step into those roles. And, there were some guys last year that didn't, and you think, well, why didn't they? And it could be any number of reasons. But you get a new sort of crop of recruits, they might see that as an opportunity and maybe they start to step up into some of those roles. And so, there's a lot of guys on this class and I hate to not talk about someone or I hate to leave them out. Let me just throw it at you. And we didn't necessarily prep for that. Is there any sort of one guy that we haven't talked about that, that you look at and just feel like you got to say something about?
Oh man, there's several guys that fit into that category, just due to the nature of this class. As far as guys that I think there's guys that you don't want to leave off the radar. Probably not one per se. Okay. You mentioned Chris Allen.
Yeah.
He would be a guy that, oh, by the way, he's from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and didn't sign with LSU. And oh, by the way, he's the number four inside linebacker at 6'4", 234. So he would probably be the first guy I would mention. The other guy I would probably mention in that category, you know, I'd probably say, you know, Chigarius Townsend.
Yep.
And the reason I say him is because what has Alabama consistently done year in, year out, with the guys like Trevon Diggs. Trevon Diggs last year was the number four athlete at his position, whatever that means, at 6'1", 183 pounds. Well, they need to change the name from athlete to versatility. Well, Chidarius Townsend, he's not the fourth ranked guy in the country. He's the sixth guy in the country. But guess what? He's coming to a program where Coach Saban, he knows how to put you where he's going to let you play where you want to start out trying to play, but he's going to end up molding you where you should go.
Yep.
Because he's really, really good at that. And so if I was a top athlete by that category, which is kind of a silly category, Alabama is definitely a place I would come.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think that's a good pick. And you know, ironically, I kind of go to the secondary for sort of my final guy that I didn't know exactly where to talk about him, but you know, I just want to throw his name out there is a Daniel Wright. I'm, you know, there's just something about him. His top end speed is maybe not what you look for. I think he has an opportunity to work on that, but I think he's got really good ball skills. And so I think he might be an interesting player to sort of develop into something. And could he play a star type position? You know, can he maybe work on his 40 time and play at a strong safety? I mean, he has a smaller frame, but he's listed as a safety. And, you know, that could just be in you know, in high school, they want to move him around and let him be super versatile. They talked about his ball skills and his non-offensive touchdown counts and his interceptions. And he just seems like, hey, he might be a guy that, you know, before we know it, he's sneaking in some playing time and making some plays. So, and again,
and by the way, he was in Florida State's, you know, backyard and decommitted from Florida State, right? So
absolutely.
Obviously he's got some pedigree. Hey, I want to mention real quick before we wrap up that, you know, the biggest thing for Alabama is that a lot of teams have really good recruiting classes year in to year out, the top 10 or 15 or 20. But what truly makes Coach Saban different, in my opinion, is what he does when they set their foot on this campus.
Yes.
And his ability to, for them, how they grow and mature as a football player during their college years. Other schools bring in a four-star, we bring in a four-star, but then project 4 years out and our guys are just head and shoulders above those other guys, whether it's a four-star or a five-star. And that I think is what allows Saban to continue having this dominance and this separation.
Yeah, it really is sort of it truly is development. It's not just, oh, he's a sophomore, so he'll be better than as a freshman. And as a junior, he'll be better as a sophomore. And you know, it's not just the experience. It's not just being a year older. There's an intentionality to, you know, it's like, you know, Malcolm Gladwell's, you know, intentional practice. You spend more time with intentional practice and you will get better. And that's really the function that Saban serves. It's not just they're going to get better because they're a year older. No, they're better because they've had a year of our system, a year of our process, a year of our intentional process. It's not just the passage of 12 months. It's the investment of intentional effort over that 12 months that makes them better. And that just seems to be something that not all coaches, not all programs, certainly not all those that we've had at Alabama have embraced that. I mean, we've seen guys come in and play as a freshman, and that's about as good as they've ever been, you know, as they ever are in their career. And they never sort of evolve. And while that's impressive as a freshman, it's a letdown as a junior, you know? And we've had guys that we've seen, you know, under coaches where they just don't get any better. They are what they are, and that's all they'll be, you know, which sometimes can be enough. But man, you put that with the right coaching and the right effort and the right development, man, that's when you got something special. And I think you're spot on. You know, these guys are entering a, I almost want to say laboratory, but it's not a laboratory because, you know, there a lot, you know, it's more of a science. And it's more of a known thing. Come in, do this, and here's what you get for it. It's not an experiment. It's a known quantity, and some players can hack it and some can't. And I hope we've got a list of names here. Some we've talked to, some that we haven't, that are going to invest well into this process, and they'll just be the next sort of group of legacy players. And I hope to get to come back and write, you know, sort of a retrospective on the 2017 class, because, you know, there's a lot of talent here and they can certainly take us places.
No, absolutely. I think this is going to be, you know, while I think Saban's got many more years to coach, this could be a nice bookend over his first decade as far as how this class shapes up when all is said and done.
Yep. Time to start filling up another shelf then, huh?
Well, he said today, man, that this was 3 years in the works. And yes, that just tells you, you know, what he puts into this. He's been working on this class for 3 years.
Yep. Yep. So
I enjoyed it, man. And now I'm ready for A-Day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, has this class saved Alabama that was careening off the career into oblivion? Has this class done that?
You know, I don't think Armageddon is here just yet.
We staved it off one more week.
Yes. Yes. I think we've been able to do that.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I agree with that. And A-Day. Yes. I can't wait. You know, not just the A-Day, the game, but spring practice and sort of following, you know, some of those scrimmages and some of those developments. We're going to see a lot of competition. We're going to see a lot of players sort of move positions and all of that stuff. And the media is going to go nuts about it. And everyone's going to go nuts about, you know, we're doing these things. But it's all about getting the best players developed and the best players on the field. And yeah, A-Day is going to be a lot of fun. Certainly look forward to that. Hey, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for listening and roll tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the tide. Got that, coach? Of course. Roll Tide.